In the name of Jesus, I speak. Yeah. I've been scheduled to talk about some of the minor prophetic books in the Old Testament scriptures. So I'm going to tell you what I will be doing for the next few days. Right? I think I will share with you two of the minor prophetic books, and one of which is Zephaniah, and the second one is Micah. All right. I have written some very brief notes on the book of Micah, so I hope that if you have time tonight, please read through them, all right? So that tomorrow when we come for the lessons on Micah, we can discuss some of the points mentioned in the booklet. All right. Now, I think if you look at the handout first, I want you to turn to page 22. Please turn to page 22. Right. 22 to 24. All right. Now there are some guidelines, which is no way a complete representation of the study of the book of any minor prophets. Okay, this is only a basic guidelines. So I hope that you can go through them. If you have any points that you want to make tomorrow, or if you think that we should add anything to it, please feel free to let me know about it. Okay? Now, because sometimes when you read the book of the minor prophetic books, they appear to be very monotonous, very dry, and sometimes they appear to be very uninteresting. Okay? So I hope that these guidelines can help you read or understand some of the books better. Okay, so probably I'm thinking tomorrow we can go through them, point by point. Now, I think as far as I'm concerned, when we study any prophetic books, it does not just talk about the things that happened then, and many of the messages recorded in the book actually point to the future, one of which is the situation of the church that we are in today. Okay, so I think we can always make reference to our church situation based on the messages in any prophetic books. All right, but again, before I talk about Zephaniah, there are still many things that I'm not too sure myself. All right, so I can only share with you what I know. All right, okay. I have decided to probably spend 3 hours to go through Zephaniah, and for the rest of my lessons, I'll talk about Micah. Okay? Is that okay? Normally, I don't give a lot of homework to you. But I think I should. I'll tell you what, homework for tonight. I give you homework first. We turn to the book of Micah. I have got a question, okay? Think about this. And then maybe we can discuss tomorrow, right?
Well, we read chapter 3. Chapter 3 first. Okay. Chapter 3, yeah? Now, if we read verse 11 and verse 12, yeah? Chapter 3, verse 11 and verse 12. Her head judge for a bribe, her priest teach for pay, and her prophets divine for money. Yet they lean on the Lord and said, is not the Lord among us? No harm can come upon us. Verse 12. Therefore, because of you, Zion shall be plowed like a field. Jerusalem shall become heaps of ruins, and the mountains of the temple like the bare hills of the forest. And here it talks about the destruction of Zion. Okay. Now, take this into prophetic spectrum. Okay, look at it in this way. We know that prophetically speaking or biblically speaking, Zion represents the church. Okay. Now, if in chapter 3 here it talks about the destruction or the demise of the church or the demise of Zion, yeah, then think about the significance of chapter 4. Okay, because in chapter 4, it talks about the emergence of the highest mountain. Right? The emergence of the highest mountain. Because in chapter 3, it seems that there is a gap between 3 and 4. Am I right? Because Zion is to be destroyed. And chapter 4, when it comes to chapter 4, it talks about the revival. It seems that all the re-establishment of the highest mountain. So can you put it on the timeline of history? Right? How does that come about? Okay, think about it. Think about it. Right? Okay, this is one of the points that we need to bear in mind. First, not exactly homework, but a point of consideration, things that you can think about. You can get what I'm saying now. The thing is, in chapter 3, Zion is to be destroyed. And in chapter 4, it talks about the emergence of the highest mountain. Okay, how can you put that in? On the timeline of history. You get what I'm saying? Is my question clear? Or you are confused by what I'm saying? Sorry if I've not made myself too clear. I repeat myself. Okay? A point for consideration, yeah? Now, if chapter 3 talks about demise of Zion. Right? It's going to be what? Destroyed, yeah? Right? And then chapter 4 here, and it springs up an idea that Zion is going to be what? Re-established. Alright? I want you to put this on a timeline or on the timeline of history. Okay? And if we can do that, then we'll begin to know how we can study the book of Micah in greater detail, but also in a prophetic sense. That points to the church. You get what I'm saying? Alright? Now, the next thing is, next question. Think about this. Turn to chapter 4. Chapter 4, yeah? Now, if we read verse 6 to verse 8, yeah? Chapter 4, verse 6 to verse 8. Here it talks about how the Lord will reign over them in Mount Zion and how, what? Zion will what? Prosper, okay? And if God is with His church, Mount Zion, surely, what happened? The church will flourish, okay? But again, it seems that there is a point of contradiction in the book of Micah. When you read verse 9 onwards, then question begins to appear, alright? They kept asking question like, is the Lord in our midst? Right, what happened? If we say chapter 4 is the true church, it's the true church, then why is it that when we come to verse 9, it seems that there are so many problems? Right? And like Zion have to go through a process of being, well, reborn. You get what I'm saying? Okay? Now, so these are the two points that we can think about, and then tomorrow we can come back to discuss. You get what I'm saying? Have I made myself clear enough or I've confused you? Okay, the third point, third question, rather. Sorry, it just come to my mind. Okay. All right. If you read Micah from chapter 4 onwards, can you specifically tell me about what the problem are? What the problems are from 4 to 7? Okay? From 4 to 7. List down all the problems that you can see in from chapter 4 to chapter 7. Okay? And then think about this problem and see whether they occur in the church or not. You get what I'm saying? Hello. Sorry if I have confused you. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes. Yes, in our church. And to see them whether they match. Yeah, okay. Have I confused you? Sorry. Okay. Yeah, mine. Okay, one more. For you to start thinking now. The other one is, you see, this book to me, I think, is quite it's not strange, but it's quite unique in a sense that because somehow this prophet, yeah, this Micah, his idea, his expressions, his thoughts, you know, or even his train of thought are being scattered all over in the book. Okay? I'll give you an example, yeah? Give you an example. Okay, we read chapter 1. Verse 8. Okay. Therefore I will wail and howl, I will go stripped and naked, I will make a wailing like the jackals, and a mourning like the ostriches. Okay, this is the first one. Now the second one, yeah? Chapter 3. But truly I am full of power by the Spirit of the Lord and of justice and might to declare to Jacob his transgression and to Israel his sin. Okay? You see that somehow in between passages, yeah? And this person or the personality of Micah is being introduced. Think about it. What is the significance of that? Why is it so? You know, it seems that there is no relevance sometimes. Sorry? 3:8. Chapter 3, verse 8. Okay, I give you one more. There are quite many, okay? Just one more. Okay, we read chapter 7. Yeah? Chapter 7. Chapter 7. Okay, verse 7. Therefore I will look to the Lord, I will wait for the God of my salvation, my God will hear me. It seems that each time he has conveyed a message, right, then he began to speak to himself. Right? Now in this situation, what should I do? You get what I'm saying? Think about the relevance to our life or to our ministry work. Okay, these are the four points here for us to think about. So tomorrow when we come, then we can have a better discussion. Is that okay? Or you prefer to do some homework, some writing or whatever. It's up to you. No. Okay. We turn to Zephaniah. Okay. Now, before we talk about this book, yeah, I think as far as the historical setting at the time or background at the time, I think you can read up yourself, all right? I think if you read verse 1, here is during the time of Josiah, one of the kings of Judah. And I think if I'm correct, you can see this in 2 Kings 22-23. In that time, Josiah was making a reformation to change the nation around, right? And I think with this backdrop, then we can think about this book here, Zephaniah. Okay, now, before we study the book, there are some of the, what do you call it? Some of the ideas, right, introduced by Zephaniah. We need to look into it, all right? Now, there are some specific terms, not exactly terms, places that he used, we can think about, okay? Or words that he has used. Now, I want you to turn to, where is it? Chapter 1 first, yeah? Chapter 1? Okay. Chapter 1? I want you to read verse 3. Yeah? You know, there are some specific words used in some of the prophetic books. We need to find the meaning or whatever. If you can, you research into them first. And I think that helped us understand the book better. Right? When you come across with this kind of words. Okay, now, chapter 1, verse 3. I will consume men and beasts. I will consume the birds of the heaven, the fish of the sea, and the stumbling blocks. In the English version, my version is says stumbling blocks. What do you think they refer to? Right, stumbling blocks. Okay, first one. Now, the second one, yeah? I want you to read chapter 1, verse 16. Verse 16. Okay, a day of trumpet and alarm against the fortified cities and against the high towers. Right? Now, we find that these few terms, like fortified cities or fortress, even fortress, or high towers, are commonly used in most of the prophetic books. Now, I want you to find out the meanings. What do they refer to and what are they? You get what I'm saying? So it helped us understand better. Why is it that in this context here, in this situation in particular, that God would like to destroy the fortified cities and the high towers? Alright? Think about them. So if you have time, please also search into them. Okay, now, the next thing is, if you read chapter 2, right? Now, I think one of the features of the prophetic books is that after a warning has been given to the nation of God, it seems, logically follows by what? The warning against foreign nations. All right? Now, like from chapter 2 onwards, chapter 2. Okay, here it talks about what? Gaza, verse 4, Ashkelon, Ekron. And we know that these are the, if I'm correct, they are the city of the Philistines. Okay? And then if you read verse 8, here it talks about the nation of Moab, the nation of Ammon. And also if you read further down the line, verse 12, here it talks about the Ethiopians. And also in verse 13, it talks about the Assyrians. Alright, now ask yourself this question: why is it that these four nations or more are mentioned in these chapters? Now, I think normally we think that after warning has been given to the nation of God, obviously the rest of the warning should be also directed to foreign nation. But probably we should change our perspective slightly to adjust it slightly. Look at this in the context of the city of Zion. Now, why do I say that? If you turn to chapter 2, the last part, verse 15, and here it refers to a specific city, verse 15, This is the rejoicing city that dwells securely, that set in her heart, I am it, and there's none beside me. How has she become a desolation? A place for beasts to lie down, everyone who passes by her shall hiss and shake his feet. Okay? Now, to me, if I have understood it correctly, it seems that all this warning are directed to a city, a particular city, a specific city. Alright? Now, again, we can read through it. If we have any point in mind, then we can discuss. Alright? Tomorrow, hopefully. Okay, now, the next thing is, one thing that I realized in this book, okay, in this book is this. I want you to read chapter 2.
We read verse 6. We find that surprisingly, every time when God says that his judgment shall befall a foreign nation, that immediately after that is what? It's about pastoring or shepherding. Okay, we read verse 6. The sea coast shall be pasture, with shelters for shepherds, and folds for flocks. Now, verse 7. The coast shall be for the remnants of the house of Judah. They shall feed their flocks there. Okay? Now, it seems that, okay, and this is not exactly a warning which has been given, right, in the timeline of history to go against a particular nation as such. Because here, it seems that it is talking about after these people have been warned, have been chastised by God, then it makes what? Pastoring possible. It seems that way. You get what I'm saying? Alright? Now, if you read on in verse 7, what happened? The last part of verse 7, it says, for the Lord their God will intervene for them and return their captives, and these people shall return. Now, if you read, verse 14, it's the same.
Is it?
Yes. Verse 14, yeah? The herd shall lie down in her midst. It all has to do with what? It seems, okay? To me, it seems it all has to do with the sheep pasturing. Okay? Now, we move on. I want you to read chapter 3. Chapter 3, yeah? Chapter 3. Lesson finished. Okay, chapter 3, verse 20. At that time I will bring you back, even at the time I gather you, for I will give you fame and praise among all the people of the earth when I return your captive before your eyes, says the Lord. Obviously, historically speaking, okay, the return of the exile from the captivity of Babylon did take place, or did occur. Even if you look at the history of Israel in the year 1948, we see that they returned reestablish their kingdom or their nation. But probably we can look at it from a slightly different perspective. Now, why do I say this point to the church? Because if you read chapter 3, here it talks about the holy mountain of God in chapter 3. Yeah? Now, I want you to read verse 11, chapter 3, verse 11. Yeah. In that day you shall not be shamed for any of your deeds in which you transgress against me, for then I will take away from your midst those who rejoice in your pride, and you shall no longer be haughty in my holy mountain. Okay? So we cannot just take this as a history, a story which happened in the history of Israel. But I think here it points to the church, okay, in the holy mountain of God. Alright? Okay, so these are some of the key features that I have found, which are very interesting for us to search more into them. Alright? If you can do that, please do it tonight as well. Okay, your homework will keep adding on more and more as the lesson progresses. You get more homework or whatever. Okay, now how many of you have read Zephaniah? Just a show of hand. How many of you have read it before? Okay. Preachers not counted. How many of you have read it before? Show of hand. Neither do I, don't worry. Okay. Alright, now. If you have read, do you realize that there are conversation between God and man? Do you realize there are conversation in the book? You know, you see that these people they don't speak out. You know, they speak in their heart. You realize that? Do you realize it? Okay, chapter one.
Verse 12. And it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem with lambs and punish the men who are settled in complacency, who say in their hearts, the Lord will not do good, nor he will do evil. These people, they don't speak out, but they speak in the heart. Right? But what had been spoken in the heart was actually revealed. You get what I'm saying? Right, now, second example, yeah? Chapter 2. We read verse 15. Right? Here it says, this is the rejoicing city that dwells securely, that said in her heart. Again, they don't speak out. No. I'm it, and there's none beside me. They are like God. You get what I'm saying? They all talk in their heart. Yeah? So this is quite a unique features in the book of Zephaniah. You get what I'm saying? Alright? Now, so I find that sometimes you can look out for these key features, right? By reading through it, obviously as many times as you can, then you can actually gather many such examples. Then you can illustrate in your Bible study or whatever. Okay? This is how we can go about studying it. Okay, now the difficulty that I'm facing, to be honest, when studying the book of, I mean in general, the minor prophetic books or the major prophetic books, you know, some of the terms or some of the words to me are very alien to me, that I don't normally associate them very well. So because of that, I have to, you know, search into them to find out exactly what they mean, either in the context of history or in the context of the Bible or whatever. Right? So from there, I can come up with a meaning, right? And then I can try to understand the book better. You get what I'm saying? This is how you can go about, you know, understand the book. You know, if we don't resolve some of the major words, like what I've given you, fortresses, fortress, high tower, you know, then it becomes difficult. Why destroy high tower? Why destroy fortress? You get what I'm saying? So find out first. Then it helps you understand better. Alright? Is that clear? Do you have question before I proceed on? Any question? I think as far as the teachings are concerned, I think you have heard so many already. Yeah? So I don't think it's good for me to repeat. So, but I merely share with you how we can go about studying some of the books. Right. Yeah. Any questions? You know, now I'm getting old. I cannot see very well. Any questions? No? Okay. If not, then we come to chapter 1. Okay. Sorry, yeah. What does Zephaniah mean? What does it mean? What does it mean? Anyone? What does it mean? Hey? Yes. The Lord hides or the Lord has hidden. That's very good. Okay. Now, so you find that, yeah? One other thing I would like to mention to you, okay? When you read prophetic books, yeah? Sometimes the name of the prophet concerned, okay? The meaning of the name can be actually found in the entire book itself. You get what I'm saying? Now, if the Lord has hidden, can you find passages which talk about how the Lord can hide a person or can keep a person safely in security in times of danger or in times of punishment? You get what I'm saying? Can you find a passage in Zephaniah which says that? Can you? Okay, it's chapter 2, huh? Alright, now we read verse 3, okay? Okay. Seek the Lord, O you meek of the earth, who have upheld his justice. Seek righteousness, seek humility. It may be that you will be hidden in the day of the Lord's anger. Can you see now? So, the name of the prophet here can actually, I mean, the meaning of it, his name, can actually be found in the book itself. You get what I'm saying now? Yeah? So, here is where it's then. How can we be kept from danger by God? Here it provides a solution. Yeah? And actually, it's a verse 3 itself. It's like a way open for the people to be hidden in the Lord in times of what, danger, in times of punishment. You get what I'm saying now? Yeah? Okay. Now, the second one, yeah? The second one is more related to the church. It's more related to the church. Now, I want you to turn to chapter 3. Okay? Chapter 3. Please read verse 12. Yeah? Verse 12. Chapter 3, verse 12. I will live in your midst, a meek and humble people, and they shall trust in the name of the Lord. Okay? Now we find that the mountain of God, yeah, in this case, it seems in chapter 3, Jerusalem, will go through a refining process, a process of purging them from sin or whatever. Okay? And what happened? Those who remain in Mount Zion, or those who are hidden by God, are those who are meek and humble. Alright? And that actually coincides with what we have just read in chapter 2, verse 3. Alright? Now, you find that when we study this minor prophetic books, you can see actually a lot of key ideas standing out. I'll give you an example. Chapter 2, we read chapter 2. I want you to read verse 10. This they shall have for their pride, because they have reproached and made arrogant threat against the people of the Lord of hosts. Okay? Now, chapter 2 verse 10 talks about pride. And then when you come to chapter 3 verse 12, it talks about meekness and humility. Alright? So, it's like a refining process. That's why I said, if we can look at chapter 2, not solely on messages given to foreign nation, then we can see a very, very good picture of what the prophet is talking about here. All right? Basically, he's talking about a transformation process in the mountain of God, in the church of God. Eventually, those who remain in Mount Zion are people who are meek and humble. All right? It's like a total reversal, like change around. You get what I'm saying now? All right? So you can actually join key ideas together. All right? Is that okay? Am I making sense? Or is too confused or whatever? Alright, if not, then we come to chapter 1. Okay, I tried to make the lesson a bit more interactive, a bit more interesting. So you don't have just to sit down and listen to me. It's not very inspiring anyway. Okay, now, I want you to first read chapter 1, verse 3, because here it talks about God is going to, punish them, consume all the things from the face of the land. Okay, here God lists down the people who are to be punished. And I want you to do an exercise now. Quickly read through chapter 1. Chapter 1. And I want you to list down the types or the categories of people that God will punish. Alright? I think in this way, make it more interesting. Alright? Okay, I give you 2 minutes to read through the whole chapter. 5 minutes. Okay, 5 minutes. Are you through? No, not yet. Okay. Okay. Now we discuss, yeah? Okay. Tell me the people whom God will punish. Who are they? Who are they? Don't give me a general statement like the wicked will be punished. Yeah, I know the wicked will be punished. Yeah, but we know that it seems that the wicked is an all-encompassing word which include many different categories of people. Right, in verse 3, with the wicked. Yeah, I know it's the wicked. But tell me specifically who they are. A stumbling block on my version, huh? According to the explanation given here, the stumbling block refers to idols. Idols. My version says idols. Yeah. Okay? Okay. What are the people that God will punish? Who are they? Okay, Baal worship. So I think for verse 4, if you want to know the background, you can read 2 Kings according to my Bible. Yeah? 2 Kings chapter 23, verse 5. Yeah, I think it lists down who are the idolatrous priests. 2 Kings, sorry. Okay, now, apart from 3 and 4, okay, we start from verse 5. I think it's easier that way, okay? Now, who are the people that God would punish? Who are they? Those who worship the stars. That is in verse 5, yeah? Those who worship the host of heaven on the housetop. Okay, also? Okay, write them down. What do you call that? What kind of faith is that? When you swear to God, you also swear to Malcolm. What is that? Huh? Idol. Yes, but okay.
Let me read again. Beside, those who worship and swear oath by the Lord, but who also swear by Malcolm.
If I today I worship Christian God, I also go there and worship Buddha. Buddha. Huh? Polytheism. I'm not sure. Polytheism in many gods.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Mr. Michael. Polytheism. Many gods. Huh? You worship many gods. But this one, it seems what? Like blending of faith, isn't it?
You mix. You blend. Is it correct? What do you call that? What do you call that? Syncretism. Is it? Huh? Blending of faith. Syncretize your faith. I don't know how to spell it. Michael, can you find out for me? You could. You know what I do? If I don't know how to spell, I just scribble, so no one knows. Mixing of faith. I think so. Okay. Okay, what else? What else? Apart from the two, what else? No, you just read from verse 5, 6 and all the way down. You get the answers. You call them backsliders who have turned back from, okay, modern term, backslider. Oh, backsliding, yeah. 1D or 2D? Eh? It depends whether you're American or British. What about Canada? 2D, 1D? 3D, 1, okay. Okay. What else? Don't jump too far away first. We are still on verse 6. What do you call that? If someone doesn't seek the Lord, what do you call that? No, give a modern term. What do you call it? If someone doesn't seek after God, what do you call it? Non-believer. No, we're talking about Israel. Israel. What do you call it? What do you call that? What? What? Lukewarm. Lukewarmer. I don't know. Can someone come up with a term? So it's easy. Good try. I can't come up with a term. I'm not seeking God, that's it. Okay, I don't know myself. All right. What else? Verse 7. Is it verse 7? God is going to punish them. What else? We come to verse 8. Who are there? Like verse 7 and verse 8 is like a description of God is going to punish them. Right. And God has started inviting His guests to come to witness the punishment or the disaster that He would pour down on those who go against Him. Okay, now, what other people do you think that God would punish? From verse 8. Hey, this is the Bible. Is there? No, the one who put on what foreign apparel, Yeah? What do you call that? So next time you come to the church, you must dress up nicely. Okay? Like me. Foreign apparels. One. How do you spell it? I can't even spell. How do you spell apparel? APP. APPAREL. Okay. Now, what is today equivalent? What does it mean? Put on a foreign apparel. What does it mean? What does it mean here? I can't hear you. Heresy. How? Can you elaborate a bit more? It's something very new to me, please. I thought foreign apparel is what? To do with? Like earrings and body piercing here and there in nose. Okay. Heresies. Is this heresy? But I thought it has a lot more to do with our deeds and behavior. What do you call that? We adopt foreign practices into our life. Like in our Christian life, we have a specific set rules or a specific set of principles to abide with. You get what I'm saying? Now, we adopt means we bring in new practices. It's like if you take this garment or whatever as a form of behavior or as a form of conduct, then probably this foreign apparel is more appropriate to be taken to mean what? Conduct, foreign conducts or practices. Yeah. Are being assimilated, yes. Are being part of our, put into our life. You get what I'm saying? Foreign apparel. Yeah. I think it makes more sense in that way. Okay, what else? What else? We almost finished chapter 1. Quick. What else? In verse 9, in the same day, I will punish all those who leap over the threshold, who fill their master's houses with violence and deceit. Verse 9 is like a kind of what? Superstition, yes. I think, you know, most people said this is linked to the incident in 1 Samuel. You know when the goddess in the Philistine temple that fell because they took the Ark of the Covenant. And most people said this is linked to that. Right? From then on they would not walk over the threshold they leapt over all the time. Right? This is what people said. Right? How true is that? I'm not too sure myself. Okay, I think it's to do with superstition. Right? Now, the second part is about what? Violence. Yeah? Violence. Okay? So, basically, we find that all these people, right, God would what? God would punish and chastise when He come or when He execute His judgment or whatever. Right? Now, it's
Surprisingly, we find that these things actually happen in the household of God, in the house of Israel, in the house of Israel. Right? Okay? All right. We take a break first then.